We are recording.
See?
We're going to talk about this week's parsha. What's the name of this week's parsha?
It says on the top here, Bamidbar.
It does say Bamidbar, but that's not right.
Oh, it says on the side here, Bahar V'chukotai.
But that was last week. That's a little arrow there.
Oh, it's an arrow.
So this week, we all call it Bamidbar, but it's not. If you look at what it says, it's Baber Shema Moshe Bamidbar Sinai. It's not Bamidbar, it's Bimidbar.
Oh, Bimidbar.
Schwa there.
Yeah.
So I love being the kind of person who says actually, you know, who just makes some kind of picky, pedantic point. But the truth is that being actually is a terrible thing, right? Because you can diffuse the whole argument. So actually, the parsha should be called Bimidbar or Bimidbar Sinai. It doesn't say Bamidbar. It doesn't say Bamidbar anywhere in the parsha until you get to Perek Yud, because that's a matter of the grammar there.
What about the name of the whole sefer?
But even that, but usually it's named after the first words, Bereshit, Shemot, or the first important word. Here it's still Bamidbar Sinai.
The sefer is called Bamidbar or Bamidbar.
That's what everyone says, and that's what I kind of talk about why we say that, even though technically, because Bamidbar Sinai is a smichut form. So if it's in the wilderness of Sinai, then you don't put the hey dia. It's not Hamidbar Sinai. It's just Midbar Sinai, but in Hamidbar. So if you put a bet there, it would be Bimidbar Sinai or Bamidbar, one thing.
Right.
So Bamidbar in the desert, in the wilderness in general, and Bimidbar Sinai would be in the wilderness of Sinai. So the first words here are, in fact, Bimidbar Sinai, but that's not what we call it. Because it really does reflect something about the whole sefer as a whole, which is what your point is. That the part of the theme of it is the fact that it takes place in the wilderness. And that's that sort of this development of Bnei Israel. From leaving Mitzrayim, they've left the Galut of Mitzrayim, but they haven't come into Eretz Israel yet. And that's the place where they developed into a nation. And that's the idea that this all takes place in Bamidbar, in the wilderness, and that's an important point. And this is the way the Maharal puts it.
Why?
Inei shnei dvarim iru lahem Israel. That two things happen to Bnei Israel when they leave Egypt. Nigalu min galut, they're redeemed from this galut in Egypt. They leave Egypt, Yeshua to Eretz Canaan, and they inherit Eretz Canaan. They'll get in there. But that's a journey, a process. And Ro'imana Basel, you see, Shebeshat Hitavut Hadvarim, when these things happen, when Bnei Israel actually come into existence, Imtza Dargat Benatayim, there's this middle stage, Benegula, Benegalut, Benekinesi Al Aretz, between leaving the land, between the moment they left Egypt, they were redeemed from slavery, and they actually enter into the land. There's this middle stage of Bamidbar. And that's an important point. This is the way Matthias Weinberg puts it, that in the desert, as he puts it, that he likes using the French title, Al Desert. Comes close to the Hebrew sense of wilderness, and that's the important point. Sense of growth, excitement, the movement itself. More appropriate than just calling it numbers, which is, I mean, it does have the census in it. There are numbers in it, but as a theme, the idea this comes in place in the wilderness. The book of transition to the saga of the nation's soaring transformation through a desert journey. In passing and passages leading to freedom and identity. Amid the wilderness serves a metaphor for the breakdown of old paradigms and standards, and that's why they had to go through this midbar in order to actually get to the point where they could enter Eretz Israel. Why then? Why a midbar? What is it about a midbar? And if you've read Rabbi Sachs, he makes this point this week. We're going to start with a note from Shimon Schwab. That's talking about the fact that the chronology in Sefer Bamidbar, and I'll call it that, is out of sequence. It's completely out of whack. The parsha starts when it says, "Vayibar Hashem Moshe Bamidbar Sinai b'Olmoed." Hashem talks to Moshe in the wilderness and in the Olmoed. "Be'achad l'chodesh hasheni," in the first day of the second month. The second year. So the year after they've left Egypt in Iyar, that's when the census takes place. And that's the Sefer Bamidbar and the beginning of Sefer Parshat Naso. Parshat Bamidbar, Parshat Naso. And then halfway through Parshat Naso, it goes back. We start talking about the inauguration of the Mishkan again. That's source 5. My sources aren't on the names. Hold on, let me change this around. So this is Perek Zayin. So it started out in the second month in Iyar, and now it's going back to Nisan. Ibiyom Kalot Moshe Elokim at the Mishkan. When Moshe finishes building the Mishkan, by Mishach Oto, and anoints it, by Kadesh Oto, and sanctifies it, the Kol Kelav, and all the vessels in it, that is Mizbech, Kol Kelav, the altar, by Yimshachem, Kadesh Otam, anoints them, sanctifies them. And then by Karibu Nisiyah Yisrael, Rosh Beit Avotam, and all the Nisiyim come. Yeah, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The Nisiyim come. Him Nisiyah Matot, those were the princes of all the tribes, Him Adim Al-Pudim, those ones who were in charge of the census. Now the census hasn't happened yet. Census won't happen till beginning of Iyar, a month later. So that becomes a problem. Understanding what's going on. Because in our Parsha, Hashem tells Moshe, it's the beginning of Iyar. You need to take a census of all the people and take these people with you. Source 6. Yitchem yiyu, and with you should be Ishi the Mateh, one person for each tribe, Ishro Shavei Tavotav, who? Head of all the families. These are the names of the people Hashem Duitchem. Ruvei El Shur Ben Shtayur, it goes through all the list of names. And if you're Bakari, you will repeat this over and over again because these are the Nisim. Those are the same Nisim that appear everywhere else. And Moshe and Aaron took these men, which were specified by name. And the implication is that they are introduced now. Hashem tells them, these are the ones you're going to appoint to be Nisim. And Rashi says that. They were specified by name. Lokan b'shemot. This is the right now, first day of Iyar. This is the point where they've been appointed as Nisim. This is when they've been named. However, they're also named when they bring their gifts for the inauguration of the Mishkan, which happened the month before. And it comes later in the parsha, but it happened already. So the Nisim were already Nisim. They're Roshei Hamatot. They were the Omdim HaPukudim. But here in our parsha, it seems to say that they are now being named. So this is how Schwab looks at that.
Who's saying they're being named? They're just listing them by name.
Well, the point is that it ends, it says, that were listed by name. And then Rashi makes the point that why didn't they say that? It says, Lo Kan B'Shemot. The implication is that they're listed here. It doesn't say, take the Nisim. It said, take these following people, and they will be the Nisim.
Well, they have been the Nisim.
They have been Nisim. So that's trying to figure out the wording here.
They were Nisim already for a year, a month.
They were. They're right. So that's the question. The wording in this week's parsha is odd. Why say it as though they're being named now? It's not an insurmountable problem.
Right.
But that's the way Rav Schwab wants to look at it, because he says they're being named differently. And this is the way he puts the problem. So we're saying, "Mamshicha ketuv lazkir kol echad ve'echad mehem bishmotehem," and the pasuk continues to mention each one of them by name. Ki'ilu zu pikisha rishona, as though this is the first time they're mentioned, the first time we've met them. But tamua, and this is hard to understand. Shari minyan ze haya be'echad l'chol sheshini. This census was in the first of the second month, the month of Iyar. Roshana sheni, let's say tamei shnayim. That's what it says. Second year. The year after they leave Egypt. They already had the Nisim. They were already appointed by the time when they left. Because 3 weeks before, they had the Chanukat HaBayit for the Mishkan. Chanukat HaMizbeach for Mishkan. Votam Anashim Shenimnu Kan, and the same men who were listed here, Heim Anisim Shekriu Kabano. They're the same names, and it says, Mate B'nei Ruven Nasi Elishur Ben Shiar, whatever his name was. It's listed all in Parshat Naso. It's very redundant. Are you Nisim? Yeah. They were the same ones who offered their Karbanah. Why listen twice? But OJ seductic. I think we also be careful in the wording in our parsha. Shekan Karim Anashim. Here they're called Anashim. They're not called Nisim. Anashim Peshutim. Shum Manui Vesara. So they are simple people without any kind of leadership, without any authority. Even though they already were known to be the Nisim, they weren't appointed now. And you should have said, you should have said you should take the Nisim that are already appointed. It doesn't say that. Where it is, Ish Islamateh. Gam Sweep we are, and you also need to explain, and that right after they're named, it says, these were called by the people as the Nisim, Rashi Al-Fayisraim, at the end of this list, they're called Nisim now, and then they're called Anashim again. It says, so this is Rav Schwab's question about the wording of the parsha here. Why we list the names here? When they already will have been listed in Nessa.
I have a question about Anashim not being an important name.
Good question. Oh, very good.
Anashim is used as an important name, like with the Meraglim and.
Yes. Right. So the question is Anashim? That I had the same question on this. You're absolutely right.
Okay, but he didn't mention that.
He's looking at least as being Anashim being less important than Nisim.
Okay.
As some kind of step down. That's his idea. He says he's apparently demotion. So that's his answer is that they're being. Nikvu B'Shemot specified for a different role than they had before. Before, they were the leaders who led the Bnei Israel out of Egypt. Now, they're getting ready to enter Eretz Israel. They're being formed into a nation, the Machaneh, in the Midbar, and they have to take a different kind of role. Verse 9. Batiratu. And the explanation is, Shalom Dama Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem was teaching them here. Even though they are Nisim, they are princes, they are important, they are honored. They need to treat themselves as Hefker, ownerless, completely open and free like the Midbar. That's what the Midbar is teaching, that you don't have, there's no such thing as status in the middle of the wilderness. They are Hefgar. They need to learn how to be Anashim Peshutim. If they're going to leave in Israel, they can't impose that kind of leadership on everyone else. They need to be completely open. And that's what it means. These people all need to be Ish, not Nasi. Without thinking of themselves as having that authority that they had before. The new Israel is much more democratic. The Elish Mor Hanashim, and these are the names, Shenibcharu B'Torah Hanashim. They need to be here in the status of Hanashim, simple people. Ve'adei Hanagazu, and when they act this way, somewhat Smum Hefker Kamidbar, they are Hefker, ownerless, unimportant, like the wilderness, Bishlichu Mahem Kol Kavod Atzmi, and they reject all kind of personal honor, Usara and authority, Zechu Asara V'mitit. Then they can get that true authority, Liot Rashi Alfei Yisrael. That's what gets them that privilege. And that's what the census here is doing, saying that, you know, everyone's got their own Shemot B'nai Yisrael, everyone's got their own position, everyone in B'nai Yisrael is important. You're not more important just because you're the Nasi. Everyone is counted exactly the same. And that's the lesson of being an Hashem, and they have to be Hefka B'Kabba Midbar. That's the And that's part of what the lesson of the Midbar means. Because it's not just the Nasi. Because if our mission is Mission of Bnei Yisrael is not only to get the Torah, that was Parsha in Sefer Shemot, but it's to give the Torah. We're supposed to be the Or LaGoyim. We're supposed to be giving it out. This isn't our special inheritance. And that's why it says that the Torah itself has to be Hefker.
The exact opposite example of that is all the discussion, maybe in Vayikra, but elsewhere. What about the Kohanim? What about the Levim? They had status. They definitely had status.
Yes.
So here, the other tribes, they can't have a Nasi in charge of the tribe?
But it has to be sequel. So that's the difference between, you know, we talk about the Keter Kahuna, Keter Malchut, and Keter Torah. Keter Kahuna has a status. You own it, and that, and you can pass it on to your children. Keter Malchut has status. Keter Torah does not have status like that. Keter Torah is only valuable if you're giving it away. You can't, you don't just pass, you don't save it to yourself and pass it to your children.
The Nesi'im had Keter Torah? Like that was
well, they were a leader of, in this set, they were leader of Bnei Israel. That's what we're getting to. That's the Bimber Rabbah. That's why this is called, the Sefer is called Bamidbar. This is where Bnei Israel as a whole had to learn that. That's verse 10. We're talking about Bayber Hashem Moshe Bimber Sinai. This is the Midrash. Ela kol mi she'eno ose atzvo kibidbar. Afgar. If you don't treat yourself like the Midbar and that, everything within it is ownerless. Eno yachol liknot hachma v'Torah. You cannot acquire Torah. The Torah itself has to be, to be a chacham in Torah, you have to consider that hefker. That's what Bamidbar means. And that's the lesson of Midbar. It's hefker for Midbar. That anyone can walk in, take it. If you're trying to hold it to yourself, build walls around the Torah, then you don't. Then you have not acquired any yachol liknot chachma. Then you don't own it at all. Torah's got to be that way.
That's an idea, a mystical idea. That you have to be empty to, in order to learn. You have to be able to receive.
Ah, so that, this is a different idea. This is not that you have to be empty yourself in order to learn more. I mean, you have to, for a lot of things, you have to free yourself preconceptions. But you have to be willing to give it away. That's the important thing, is that this can't be something that's mine. It's got to be open. You've got to be willing to take it. You can't hold it to yourself. You can't keep the secrets there. If you keep it inside, then it's not Torah.
He's saying give it away. You're really saying share.
Yes, you're not going to lose it if you do. Presumably, you don't lose it by saying it.
It sounds like very egalitarian and free hefker. And giving it away means I don't want it. Give it away.
You're right. Hefker here does mean to, it should be. It needs to be shared. And there's another idea that comes up that you can't. If you have this chiddush thought, you can't just say it outright. Immediately, you have to kind of let it percolate and figure out what it actually means. But separate still, but you don't actually have it until you've taught somebody else. And that's true of a lot of things. You don't actually understand something until you've taught somebody else either. If you can't say it in words, then you really don't know it. But that's the idea. That's the idea of being hefker, that everyone else can get it. And the Sherman Schwab continues on this. What it means to be hefker kamidbar. Nir l'farish, and I would explain it. Shekol zaman shadam chai ba'ani shalom. If every time you're just centered around your own personal, it's all about me. As hani chotzit beno ben ekono yibarach. And then the ego, interrupts between himself and Hashem. Amok she'osa asmo kehefker. But if you can make yourself hefker, it's all yours. You can. Everyone else can take this. Then this interruption, this barrier goes away, and I can now accept not only accept other people, but also accept Hashem. Then I can accept the Torah and accept the wisdom of the Chachma and the Torah, which is Dan Elokim. Then I can get closer to Hashem. What does it mean to be hefker in Torah? That if you learned a lot, lo yachzik tov alatzmo, don't consider yourself special. Shlo yitka ebohara, don't be proud of yourself. I'm so smart. Ikar, and the important thing, she'im yichadesh chidushei Torah, you think of as new thought. Lo yakpid, you should not worry, you should not care. Im dorshim devarav v'fiat tzibur, if other people say this out loud, you taught this great, brilliant idea, and everybody else is repeating it, shalom v'shem omer, but no one's mentioned you. No one attributes it to you. No one has any idea that you're the one who was so smart and figured this out. Don't be machmed on that. That's what means to be hefker. I have a good thought. It's out there. If you make yourself like this wilderness, that you don't own your chachma. It's not yours. You'll merit to getting the kind of chachma and be able to learn Torah. You have to be willing to give this out. And so that, excuse me. And that's an important part of what it means for Bnei Israel to be living in the Midbar, to see that they have to make themselves Mesim Atzmo Kamidbar. And that goes back to this first we are approaching Chag Shavuot, and when Bnei Israel come to Har Sinai, that first Chag Shavuot, what does it say? B'chosh Hashem Lishi, let's say Bnei Israel, Meretz Yisrael, Bayomazeh Bo Mibar Sinai. They come to Midbar, they pull the wilderness of Sinai, third month, on Rosh Chodesh. That's Sunday, right? Sunday is Rosh Chodesh?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. By Yisur Rephidim, so they came from Rephidim, by Bo Midbar Sinai. They come from the wilderness of Sinai, by Yichanu Ba Midbar. And that's the important thing. They dwell in the wilderness, and then by Yichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. We all know what by Yichan Sham means. We all, that's in the singular. It goes from by Yichanu Midbar to by Yichan Sham, by Yichan Sham, Ishachad B'Lev Achad. Where Rashi puts it. But in order to get to that point, they had to be by Yichanu Ba Midbar. So that's what the Torah is all about. And this is the way the Mechilta puts it. They dwelt in the wilderness. Bedim Sayona Shelo Olam, which I had to figure out what that means. That's translated as the most deserted place in the world, the ultimate desert, the true wilderness. Magid said, Bedim Sayon Shelo Olam Nitna Lehem Torah Israel. That the Torah can only be given in the wilderness, not in Eretz Israel. Not before they left Egypt. It had to be given in the wilderness. Shilu nitna be'eretz Yisrael. Specifically, the Torah be given in Israel. Are you b'nei eretz Yisrael omrim? She'lanu hi. That if you live in Israel, people who live in Israel would say, the Torah is ours. Belongs to us. It belongs to eretz Yisrael. That's the only place the Torah. Shilu nitna b'makom acher. Hayu b'nei eretz makom omrim she'lanu hi. And if it was given anywhere else, it was said, it belongs here. The Torah belongs here. V'fiyach nitna lehem b'dimasayon she'olam. Therefore, it was given in the wilderness. Kol rotsu litol yavo yitol. Anyone who wants can take it. It belongs to everyone. Torah has to belong to everyone. And so that's the goal of B'nai Yisrael, is to make sure that everyone can receive the Torah. Famous Pasuk in Yeshaya, it talks about Acharit HaYamin, Nachonia Beit Hashem, Rosh Harim, that then the Beit Hashem will be at the top of all mountains, be Samik Vot, higher than all heights. Naru Alav Kol HaGoyim, and all the nations will stream toward it. Lohu Amim Rabim, and the nation, all the nations, the many nations will come. Let us go to the mountain of God. Let's go to El Beit Elokei Yaakov, to the Beit HaMikdash. And he will teach us there, and teach us, and we'll go in his ways. Because out of Tzion comes Torah, the word of Hashem Shur Shalayim. That's the ultimate goal, is that Tzion should be like a midbar. Not desolate for many people, but in the sense that anyone can come and get that Torah that comes from Tzion. And it belongs to everyone else. So,
the last quote ends with Yerushalayim because today's Yom Yerushalayim.
It works out that way. Yeah, there's never a quiz. This connects Shavuot to Yom Yerushalayim, and that the goal is for Yerushalayim again to be a wilderness, not in the sense of being dry and deserted, but in the sense that everyone can get the Torah that's coming out of it. Now that was the mission of Bnei Yisrael. So Bnei Yisrael, who in this transitional book, from going from leaving Egypt to entering Eretz Israel, their goals become like that midbar. So that's why the Sefer really does, it's appropriate to call the Sefer Bamidbar, because that's the expression of the theme of the whole Sefer, even though grammatically it's not quite exactly right.
So is that how you started off? Is that what?
Yeah, so I started off with a well, actually. Right? We all call it Bamidbar, but that's not right. It's actually
Bamidbar.
Right. If you want to be picky, you want to pontificate on picky points, then you can tell everybody, no, well, actually, that's wrong. But telling people, well, actually, is a bad thing. It's kind of, right? No one wants... No,
like
one
no
wants,
offense, this is, but...
Yes. That's right. So, I will say that if you want to call the Sefer Bamidbar, you're right, because that's the theme of it. It's about the transition in literally the wilderness as a whole, because that's where they became the Bnei Israel, who could fulfill their mission in Eretz Israel.
But the only reason it's Bimidbar is because of the word Sinai.
Right, so it's a smichut form.
Sinai is not really a critical variable. It's like an unknown mountain, and no one ever goes to it, in theory. It's not known exactly where it is. So it should have been just, why do you even need that word there? It just indicated there was a place.
All right, so that's a question about in the Parsha, why does Hashem need to say, why did the Parsha start off with it, why was Bimidbar Sinai? The technical answer is as a contrast to Har Sinai. It's throughout the Torah, from Shemot through Bamidbar, that something that was given at Har Sinai was what Moshe got on the mountain. Then he comes down and they build the Mishkan Bamidbar Sinai. And so everything that was said Bamidbar Sinai was specifically given after that in the Mishkan when they were building this building the Machane. So it makes this distinction in where in Sinai. So they haven't left actually around the mountain. But the mountain is no longer has that holiness anymore.
The mountain, but they sure make a big point of Har Moriah, the mountain in Jerusalem.
Yes.
Well known, whereas here, Sinai.
Sinai is, right. That's the point of being in the Midbar. It's in the wilderness, right? There isn't some place where the Torah was given. Torah is everywhere. Everyone can come and take it. And that's kind of the point of what they're saying, that it had to be, but wherever we go, right over here, that it had to be given B'dimsion Shel Olam, most desolate, most deserted place in the world. Who has any idea where Har Sinai is?
But in the Torah itself, it doesn't mention Yerushalayim. It just says that HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem.
Right.
So if the book avoid mentioning the location of Jerusalem, why can it avoid mentioning that the mountain, which was the place where there is Matan Torah, had a name?
I hear the question. I don't have a good answer. Right. Why not call it Har Elokim? Right. It's the mountain where Hashem appeared on and be done with it. Why give it a name? That's a good question. I'll let you give the shiur. Well, next week is Shavuot. So 2 weeks from now, you can give the shiur on why do we need to know the name of Har Sinai if we don't know where it is.
But I don't have the answer.
Well, I get 2 weeks to find out.
But we have like the Sinai Desert. I
don't want to say anything, but there's a whole debate about if Har Sinai is one that people refer to in
the Sinai. I mean, Jebel Musa is huge. I mean, Moshe, remember, he's an 80-year-old man who's going up and down several times a day.
But a lot of people feel like, archaeologists feel it can't be where people are ascribing it to.
They must be in
Saudi Arabia.
The Saudis arguing that Jews never went to Israel and that the...
That's not a Zionist
argument.
Basically, if you figure out that it had to be a very a mountain with a lot of space so that the Israelites could encamp at the bottom, that this was the only possible mountain that it could have been in the Sinai Peninsula. But a lot of people feel like it's not big enough and it had to be somewhere else.
And the argument that is actually with Saudi Arabia is it really argues that Bnei Israel never went to what's now the land of Israel. But I wouldn't go there.
Who says that we never went to Israel, though?
That's a standard Saudi Arabian line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why it didn't. But that they came back, when they came after the Babylonian exile, they went to the wrong place. The historic, first temple Israel was somewhere in the middle of the Arabian Peninsula. No, I do not think that's right.
Wow.
But, so I have no idea where Har Sinai is. That's the point, right? We don't know where Har Sinai was because it's a Midbar. It has to be a Midbar.
Well, they took me up on a Jabal Musa many years ago, and I watched Sunrise. So Somebody thinks he knows where it is.
I do not think that Jabal Musa is Har Sinai.
Well, there's a convent right down at the foothills. So Santa Catarina, I think it was called.
Yeah, I think that's a Greek Orthodox.
Some sort of monastery or something.
I'm going to stop the recording. We can keep talking.